you.
Profiting. Yeah, cool. Yeah. Let's go into it. Yeah. I think we're good.
I.
Before Bennett has an aneurysm.
He's already had two.
he's working on this third.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Human Reaction. We are glad to have you with us. We are here in a brand new studio, and we are just getting adjusted. How do you guys like it? Do you like it so far?
It feels weird to be in a different place.
It is. Honestly. Fuck. It's really warm in here.
It's warm in here.
I think it's just because we're used to being cold.
That's true.
Yeah. Studio.
We had like one tiny little like garage heater in a huge room. It really didn't do that much. Anyways, we're getting adjusted. We hope you like it. We'll be tightening the screws and doing all sorts of fun stuff around here as we get warmed up. For now.
Puppets.
Like, oh, we got puppets. Yeah, David can do puppets. Hi-ho, no. Silva. Anyways, while you're here, please like, follow, subscribe, wherever it is that you are finding this show. And if you would like to figure out how to become a member, go to humanreactionpod.com. Members get all sorts of amazing exclusive content, including our Skiff members-only show. And this month, we are releasing our merch drop for our nuclear reactor members.
Let's go!
The top-tier members.
You asked for it.
Are getting an awesome t-shirt, and we're going to show it to you right now.
They didn't ask for it. They demanded it.
They demanded it.
They're like, where's my stuff at?
This is the members-only shirt. Secure Containment Information Facility member. I could tell you, but I'd have to kill you. If you know, you know. Members, look out for those coming soon. If you're a nuclear reactor, if you're not, you should sign up because once a year we do a merch drop for all of our members. Kyle, to you, sir.
And also come check out our Discord. You can come hang out with us, chat with us, talk about whatever you want. You can bully us about our bad takes on the show. You can do anything, really. And also, there's a special section in there for Skiff members, for our paying members. So it's a little bit more filtered in
intimate.
There. Intimate. A little bit more intimate.
Yeah. Refined. Or unhinged. Maybe both.
A little bit of both.
And also, you can be like Donald Trump and post dank memes.
Which is an allusion to something that we are going to be talking about today. It's Chris Christie eating a shitload of McDonald's hamburgers while
delivered by drone.
Fly them to him, obviously in New Jersey.
It's crazy. Donald Trump has his meme warfare has been incredible this last week. Have you seen the stuff that he's been saying about Canada?
Is this about the Trudeau, Governor Trudeau?
Yeah, he's
saying
like Governor Trudeau from the great state of Canada, this finance person did all this stuff. Like he's tweeting out just as if it's a governor that he can bully.
He absolutely owned Elizabeth Warren. Anyway, well, he is on fire. So if you're not following Trump on X, you definitely should be. David, what are we talking about today?
In a shocking turn of events, CNN frees torturer.
They're just
calls it a win.
They're out here saving the world.
Yeah, the liberation of Syria is complete, guys. We did it.
We did it.
And then we're also going to get diving into the assassination of Russia's top general.
And he shouldn't have been standing there.
It's actually true.
And a little bit of UAP stuff. We got a new theory we'll dive into, and maybe some new commentary on the UAP phenomenon in New Jersey and around the country.
If you are a small business owner looking for exponential growth, you have to connect with Adam Thune at Intellectual Patriots. He will revolutionize your business game and help you get to the next level. Adam can streamline your business practices and advertising strategies to improve your bottom line. His expertise in data engineering means he can build you the systems you need to collect and analyze market data. His mission is to provide you with invaluable insights to fuel your success. From grant writing and business proposals to digital systems integrations, even AI management, Intellectual Patriots is a one-stop shop for cutting-edge solutions. Don't wait another second. Visit intelpatriots.com to learn more. That's intelpatriots.com. This episode is brought to you by Revved Up Promo, the official apparel partner of Human Reaction. Revved Up is a premier full-service shop specializing in laser engraving, screen printing, and embroidery. Not only are they now making all of our apparel right down the road from us, they can do the same for your brand and ship it to you anywhere in the world. Revved Up helps you navigate the extensive universe of merch options and uses state-of-the-art techniques to showcase your brand in its very best light. So if you want to support our show and our generous sponsor, you can now do so by buying our merch and by turning to Revved Up Promo for your own custom apparel needs. Reach them at RevvedUpPromo.com. That's with two V's and two P's, or just check the show notes for a link. Well, let's get right into it. First up, CNN frees a torturer in Syria and calls it a win.
Yeah, and I think it'd be best off, let's just play this video and we can see what happened, and then we can kind of, there's a lot of thoughts around this right now, but we can just kind of see it from the horse's mouth what CNN reported.
Clear if there is something under the blanket.
Oh, it moved. Is there someone there?
This already feels so staged.
Is there someone there?
Is someone there?
It's a ghost.
Or is it just a blanket? I don't know.
I think it's someone.
Hello?
Hello?
You're in Syria? Try Arabic?
Surprise, motherfucker.
Yeah. Oh.
I'm a civilian, he says. I'm a civilian.
It's okay. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay.
He's saying he's from Homs, which is...
He tells the fighter he's from the city of Homs and has been in the cell for 3 months.
We're translating.
Okay, you're okay.
The
translators. You're okay. You're okay. You're okay.
He clutches my arm tightly with both hands.
Okay. Does anyone have any water?
Water.
My. Okay, it's water. It's water.
He's drinking the water.
Very dramatic.
He's got a good beard line.
Okay, you're okay.
He's got a lot of color for a guy who's been in prison.
Okay.
For 3 months, allegedly.
You're okay.
But yeah, so you kind of get the picture there. There's more to the video, like some interesting other elements to the to like the longer form in there is before they go into it. This was just something that I found really odd about it, because this will get into the narrative of what we've now discovered about this man, I think, is there's this point where they're like going through, because the CNN's essentially getting an escort through by the Syrian rebels of this prison that was cleared days before. Which
so
should raise alarm bells.
They shouldn't have missed someone in there. Is
yeah. So and while they're with the CNN escort, Clarissa Ward here, who's a pretty famed war journalist for CNN, they're like, you have to turn off the cameras because we're going to shoot the lock. So then they turn off the cameras, and we as the audience are not able to see them opening the door and shooting off the lock and going in, which is another strange variable that I don't really get why we can't see that. Maybe it's because we can't have gunfire on TV or something. I don't know. Like, but
don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious.
It'll distort the audio is really the problem. It's not good for TV.
The audio engineer.
That's right.
No, yeah. We can't do that.
Yeah.
People have PTSD and they get freaked out on TV. So.
CNN viewers would be triggered by that.
So to be clear, part of the context here is this is a Syrian prison that the rebels have emptied out of the political, prosecuted people of Syria. That's the backdrop to finding this person in the prison. The prison's supposed to be empty.
But it isn't.
There's
one locked cell and he's in it.
Yeah.
He must be real bad for the rebels not to even have let him out.
And that's also another question. It's like, how didn't they find this guy beforehand?
Yeah.
Like, rebels are going through hospitals executing people right now and they didn't find this guy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, one thing that I did see was that there were a lot of these like Byzantine tunnels and things like that. Like maybe this was more concealed. Nice. Very apropos. I don't know. I mean, just to try to steel man the side of this wasn't totally
sure.
Staged.
Well, there's a lot of unknowns here. I mean, like, we don't know that's much. We do have some interesting new things to bring to this. I mean, a lot of people are recovering this, but we think that we might have found some new information, specifically on the fact-checking organization and some of their motives and what, you know, that might add some more color to the complexity of the situation with CNN.
Well, yeah, and I think maybe just we can kind of, there's one more clip here from him seeing the light for the first time, and I want to get into some of the fact checking that's down in the community notes below this, but here is the man. He claims to be called Adel Garbel. That's Adel Garbel from Homs. At this point, that is what CNN is calling him, and that's what he called himself.
And he claimed to have been in prison for 3 months.
3 months.
And then forgotten there for the last 4 days before this, right? So he haven't had water in 4 days or food.
He looked.
You're full of shit today.
He looked very hydrated to me.
Right.
Like, I don't know. 4 days without water is like,
that's
life support.
Yeah.
Like life support.
Yes. It would be difficult to stand up.
Yeah. And here we can see him seeing light for the first time and eating for the first time in those days too. So
after 3 months in a windowless cell, he can finally see the sky. My God, the light, he says. Oh God, there is light. My God, there is light. Stay with me.
He sits down, he's like clutching her arm. I'll just kind of like bounce a little bit here ahead. They give him some food. His hand shaking while he's eating the food.
Okay.
But his body can't handle it.
You kind of get the point. Mm. We don't have to go through it all, but you get the visual that is being portrayed here, right?
So who really is that guy?
Well, so that's where things get weird. So then what we come out is that there is this fact-checking organization in Syria called Verify Psi, and they've come to identify him differently than how CNN has been reporting it. Is his real name is Salama Mohammed Salama, which weird first name, last name thing. I don't know what's going on there. But he's actually Nordic. He's actually a strange name for the region, if it's Nordic. He's actually a former first lieutenant in Assad's Air Force Intelligence. And he's known by Abu Hamza, is what the name that he's known by. And he's claiming that he was in prison for 3 months. But turns out he was actually a notorious torturer for the Assad regime and was imprisoned for 1 month due to dispute over profits with a higher ranking officer.
So it was a corruption regime within the Assad regime where if you refused to give them payments, they would take you in as a rebel and then torture you. So he had a deal with his officer, his commanding officer, on the splitting of the profits from that regime.
Yeah.
And then he got imprisoned. Apparently,
this is what the fact-checking organization on the ground in Syria, who prevents misinformation, is claiming.
Yeah. So this would be before the revolution, which only took place in the last 2 weeks. That really took out the rest of the Assad regime.
Hmm. So he sort of bit the hand that feeds, if you will. He had a confrontation with his boss, and he got chucked in prison.
Yeah. Which does show the problems in the Assad regime, right?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, and there's that. So that kind of gives like the It isn't as if CNN they could have told that story, but that wouldn't be a very compelling victim of the Assad regime. This at this point, it plays a compelling story of, and this is where I think it set off some bells in people's heads of, this is a little bit too dramatic, a little bit too in the groove.
It's too perfect.
Yeah, it's too much in the groove of the narrative, as said by what was his name? HTS Jamali.
Jelani.
From last week. We covered, I believe it was last week? Yeah,
2 episodes ago.
Last week. The problems that they had with the Assad regime, apparently, is, you know, one, he's not Islamic enough, right? He's a Baathist. He's not an Arab nationalist. Two, he's imprisoning people he doesn't like, and there's problems of corruption within the regime, right? So
There's added things here too with just like the internet sleuthing that's going on. A lot of people are making, and this is an area where it's just like, take this with a grain of salt here a little bit, but just like people are making observations of, he doesn't really appear like he was in jail for even a month, but 3 months. People are kind of noting his beard doesn't seem to be necessarily as scraggly as you would imagine for that. Mm-hmm. People are also noticing they're taking like screenshots of very particular parts in this video of like his hands and his fingernails. They seem almost like too clean and too well kept for the time period that he allegedly would have been in there for. There's also just like timing things of like when the rebels came in through this prison and all this stuff too, where a lot of people are raising alarm bells because of that type of information. And that's information where it's like, you know, can't take, like, have a little bit of an arm's length with it, but sure. It's worth putting in the calculus.
One other thing is I assume that they are provided relief for bodily functions to be as PC as possible here, but if he was left in this cell for 4 days, you would think it would probably reek in there, and that would probably have been noted. or seen, but I didn't see any. Did you guys? It looked relatively clean in there.
Unless we don't get really shot at them.
Unless there's some sort of dump spot. But like, it's this thing too, where it's like, we're not really given the opportunity to see more of the cell or even the opening of the door to the cell. Like, that's strange here. We don't get
the sound stage in LA.
It's a sound stage in LA.
Well, I mean,
just like the moon landing.
And important to understand, like, she's doing this in collaboration with HTS, which is a faction of the Assyrian rebels, like a coalition of rebels. When we covered it last week, kind of explained that. So go check that out if you're confused by that. And themselves, historically and prior to this, were allied with and a part of a larger group that was Al-Qaeda, right? So she is on the ground and has been for some time reporting on, and she's kind of been in and out since 2013 with these rebels, creating relationships and covering, you know, the downfall of ISIS and the kind of creation of this rebel faction, their war against Assad.
Hmm.
But then this gets into some of the digging. We did a little sleuthing ourselves of some things here, too. And we did a little look-see into this fact-checking organization, which brought forward this new narrative of the torturer, which this gets even stranger because we looked at VerifyC, Syrian fact-checking organization. Like, all of a sudden, when I hear fact-checking organization, all of a sudden alarm bells start ringing because, like, right. We have all this context now of everything, especially with like kind of the Mike Benz train of thought or Schellenberger train of thought, Twitter files, all these fact-checking organizations and all this like government funding and all this philanthropy efforts in order to go into this. So we just did a little quick search on who funds VerifyCy. And what we came across was an organization by the name of Internews. And we're like, okay, so there's a parent group here, which is common in all of these endeavors. And we're like, okay, who funds Internews? Want to guess who funds Internews?
Hey, well, I could guess, but I know.
When we asked it, I did say, my bet, I put it out there before we actually found it.
Before we found it, he guessed it.
My bet is USAID, and it was...
You have AIDS. Yes, you have AIDS.
Every time.
It does work.
It's a bit more of a stretch, but I love it. It's great.
It's good. But not just...
Yeah, so there's government funding that's going into this, USAID, which is... American government funding.
It's a CIA operation. Yep. But important to remember, and this is something. These are things that we are all learning together, right here. I mean, not everyone knew this not too long ago, but it's now well understood that USAID is an arm of the government, of the CIA specifically, in the pivot that happened post Carter, for the CIA to go from everything being in house to now being kind of the government relations arm of. And propping up all of these cutouts in order to conduct their same missions that they're doing prior to Carter, after Carter, with private philanthropy so partnerships.
They just shuffled all their dirty work into NGOs that aren't technically associated with the CIA, but they're all funded by the CIA or the State Department.
And obviously operating on the goals of the State Department.
Right.
Whatever goals and ambitions they set. In this case, Operation Timber Sycamore.
Mm-hmm.
But wait, there's more. Now let's go into the foundations and philanthropic efforts that are going into the funding of this thing.
Yes.
Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Love them.
Open Society Foundation.
My favorite.
Knight Foundation, Ford Foundation. The list goes on.
AOL Time Warner.
Then there's the corporation side, the corporate side.
I'm jumping ahead.
Yeah, I kind of put it into three categories. Then there's the corporate side. And two notable ones that popped up for me were AOL Time Warner Foundation and Microsoft.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Don't be suspicious.
Yep. All right. So we can then trust the narrative that VerifyCy is delivering.
Well, it's possible. I mean, it seems grounded in reasonable reporting in the sense that this is they were able to get people on the ground to confirm that this looks like him. They were able to do software face matching, right, to confirm that based upon photographs in him in his government role, this guy Abu Hamza, you know, checks out with software as being the same guy as this prisoner.
Although the thing is that because now we have two narratives. So we have the original CNN narrative, which, you know, Clarissa might have been just, you know, duped by the story that this guy presented and all this stuff. I'm doubtful of that because I've just seen the history of her reporting. But then there's this narrative here, which kind of counters CNN's narrative, because like the original narrative was CNN journalist saves the life of Assad prisoner. Mm-hmm. Right. And then now there's this new thing where it's, well, Assad torturer saved by CNN journalist that comes in from this fact-checking organization funded by the State Department and all this stuff.
Now, that's the weird part, right? If you're listening,
they're kind of conflicting.
If you're keeping up at home, you're like, okay, wait a minute, I thought that this fact-checking organization was funded by all these people who would probably want to support the narrative that CNN had freed a political prisoner.
Right.
So, like, how do we reconcile those two things?
Dave has a theory, and I think that this is an appropriate theory.
So my theory is this is an asset, not an agent, right? They're receiving money from a group that receives money from the USAID.
And when you say this, you mean VerifySci, this fact-checking org.
Yeah.
So or members within, too.
Right. Like. So there's a guy there who's got it, who took a job, and his job is to hold the Assad regime accountable. And he probably saw, oh my God, they imprisoned that terrible torturer guy a month ago. And he's obviously tracking that very closely because he's on the ground, right? And he probably knows guys in these towns and has contacts and stuff like that.
And his order is make Assad look bad.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's how to understand these operations, right? Is the whole of society model, right? You take media, nonprofits, private corporations, and you focus point them using money and influence towards a State Department goal, right? So they're one sliver of this. And this guy on the ground has the order to hold the Assad regime accountable. So maybe he's a little autistic, you know, maybe just a little bit focused on the mission and not thinking about the larger political picture of where the money comes from. And next thing, because it's important not to see these things as too monolithic.
Yeah.
Right. So it could just be that he sees this guy on scene and is like, wait, that's the torturer guy. Why are they freeing the torturer guy?
Yeah. Yeah.
Confirms that it's a torture guy, uses, you know, sound reporting to do so, and then releases and then has the opposite intended effect.
Guys are like, dude,
wrong time.
Well, and that's the important thing, I think, to take away of like how the quote unquote deep state operates is it's not like everybody's in on the game and everybody has like the clear picture of everything that's going on. There's all these different organizations that are following the incentives that are put out in front of them. Mm-hmm. And this guy kind of has his very particular orders probably, or this group of holding the Assad regime accountable. And they're just moving in accordance of how they think is their best to do that. And that might go counter with the other regime narrative that might be coming out of CNN, right? Because like they're not talking to each other necessarily.
And keep in mind that this is the same, you know, deep state architecture that had the Pentagon funded forces fighting the CIA backed forces only a couple years ago.
No, this is, it's decentralized. Yeah. Like the whole power structure is decentralized, and there's pros and cons of decentralization. And you're joking because there's like,
I'm laughing.
There's
kind
that. Of like a crypto like yeah. narrative that kind of comes with that. Or just like the decentralized, but like decentralized forces is like, you have to create these types of models and it gets very muddy because nobody's necessarily talking to each other appropriately, because like not everybody's necessarily 100% on the same page. Everybody's like filled in and built, put together on a team because of Venn diagrams, right?
I love Venn diagrams.
Yeah, I love Venn diagrams too. You know who really loved Venn diagrams?
Yes, I do.
AI is kind of a fancy thing. It's, first of all, it's two letters.
You know, we need a Venn diagram soundbite from her. We should find one of those.
So one of
I think we should have zero soundbites for her now.
Okay, as of midnight on New Year's Eve,
we
will purge all Kamala soundbites.
I heard rumors that she might be angling for governor in California.
Well, when her campaign is announced, we will maybe reemerge with some fresh sound.
No one cares. All right. So who is Clarissa Ward? This journalist on the ground is the question.
Kyle heard that.
What?
Nothing.
I'm sure the audience heard it too.
I missed it.
We'll just let that one slide by. If you caught it, you caught it.
So it's important to understand that obviously part of this is the compelling story, right? That could be the self-manipulation part on CNN. That's why they didn't actually do much fact-checking here behind that. Who really is this person? They just kind of took them at face value. So there's that. There's also just, I mean, that's the editorial question. Like, why weren't the editors saying, who is this guy? Where's this guy come from? Et cetera, right? What about a fact-checking organization on the ground? Would they know anything about this guy? You know what I mean? And doing the kind of reporting that we would expect, right, out of a news agency reporting on, you know, using an interested party who is trying to tell a narrative to try to control the narrative globally about how to understand the Syrian revolution, right? How to understand that is obviously they're an interested group, so you can't take their word for it,
right?
Right, and staging props, operations of that sort are common behavior that we know that Al-Qaeda has been doing for a very long time. So what we have here is in this, and I don't know if we want to actually get into the audio of it, but I just wanted to show. This is Clarissa Ward testifying to the UN about the Islamist heroes helping the Syrian regime change war on the ground.
I think we can get into the audio.
Okay.
The only ones who have emerged as heroes on the ground, alongside brave doctors like Dr. Attar and Dr. Sahlul, alongside the White Helmets, are the Islamist factions. Even to those who hate fundamentalism, even to those who see that the rebels themselves are carrying out atrocities, and not because the people there are all terrorists, but because the Islamists are the ones who have stepped in to fill the void. And that should not come as a surprise to anyone in this room, because all of us could see it happening as far back as 2012. The only ones who have
And I think it kind of goes into a little bit of similar to what we had that on two episodes ago of like, they've grown up, they've changed.
Yeah.
They've matured.
They've matured.
Yeah. Well, and what she's talking about here is in the fall of ISIS and in the loss of territory by Assad throughout the civil war, there were an absence of services on the ground. And you take these people who are trying to build a country in ISIS in the desert, you know, between Syria and Iraq, and they move into Syria and then do the same thing all over again. Now, the trick here is, what's kind of unasked in that is, will the result of this regime change war be better than what Assad had going before in Syria, where a Ba'athist, a secular dictator, was, you know, relatively low amounts of civil strife and, you know, a relatively safe country where minority groups such as the Christians and the smaller minorities of Muslims in the area, in this case, the Shiites, and other kind of smaller groups, how will they be treated under the new regime, right? And you're literally doing exactly the same thing that we did in Libya and these other places, putting a Islamist in charge of that. And that's how it's shaking out right now. So just kind of doing the time slice and saying like, well, the war started now. So it doesn't matter whether or not the war was a good idea. What matters now is that Islamists are on the ground providing sources. And that problem itself is too tight of a time slice in order to understand whether or not the strategic aim is worth it.
Right.
And that's what she's testifying to. Hmm.
It's worth mentioning too here is that, like, I'm just scrolling through her Wikipedia pages and seeing some of the accolades that she has and the major stories that she's been a part of. And we're looking plenty of time on the Taliban. She's a war journalist, dealt with the civil war torn Aleppo situation back in the day. If you guys remember, what is Aleppo? Right? If you remember those days,
oh yeah.
She was involved in the joint investigation, by the Insider and Bellingcat. We've mm-hmm. talked about Bellingcat before, mm-hmm. CIA op and out of the Netherlands. Der Spiegel, reporting on how the Russian Federal Security Service members stalked Alexei Navalny and poisoned him, which is not official, the poisoning. So interesting on the Wikipedia side, right? Mm. So like you kind of see, and she was the one deployed to Kiev on Ukraine war.
And I believe we covered them. Remember Navalny is that's the dissident in Russia mm-hmm. who died in a Russian prison.
Yep.
And then the entire media apparatus, Paul said, Putin poisoned him. He must have killed him. It must have been that's why he died. And that was order to take him out so there wouldn't be a popular Russian revolution.
But when I see Bellingcat and Der Spiegel in the same sentence with her, all of a sudden my alarm bells go off. Uh-oh. Like everything about the story, my alarm bells are going off constantly.
Well, we have this this report from CBS News as copied by Glenn Greenwald on comments that she made in 2021, where she boasted that she had stopped looking at U.S. policy in Syria as a journalist and only as an activist. Hmm. We can read out the quote just for our audio-only listeners. Calissa Ward, yeah, I mean, you know, I will cop to the fact that I think I crossed the line in Syria. I became so emotionally involved and I was crushed by the U.S. response and the U.S. policy. Not that I was advocating for intervention, but I just felt that the U.S. policy, and I know, Michael, you and I have discussed this at times in the past, that I felt there really wasn't a strong U.S. policy, that we had said Assad must go, and then we had done nothing to make him go. And down below it says, I wrote Ben Rhodes. Now, Ben Rhodes was the national security director under Obama, probably like the comms department of that. So in an email to his official White House account, and I said, Dear Ben, I hope you are sleeping soundly as Aleppo burns. At least we have the Russians to sort out. Best wishes, Clarissa. So that doesn't sound like a value neutral journalist. That sounds to me like a journalist very much interested in the clean break.
Hmm.
Right. So, and she's done lots of reporting in Israel. That was, you know, I mean, she's done some reporting on Gaza and kind of the human tragedy in Gaza, but she's also done a lot of reporting alongside the IDF. that is, you know, the kind of ops that you would expect out of corporate journalism.
So you're saying that this kind of establishes a bit of a motive for why she might go along with something that was kind of a propaganda piece.
Yeah. Could be willful ignorance. Could be like, these are the good guys. They wouldn't lie to me, right?
Yeah. And it could be that they did fool her. They pulled the wool over her eyes and they planted this guy. And
or it was an outright op of CNN where they were saying, we're gonna dramatize this moment. It doesn't matter who he really is. We're going to dramatize the moment. And the classic one of that is Chris Cuomo coming out of his basement after COVID. Everyone, I don't know if you guys remember this. And this is obviously not when Chris Cuomo came out of his basement. But then they decided, like, oh, we'll film it to demonstrate to the plebs about how to come out of your basement.
When people had seen him, like, out in his backyard and things like that, too. Yeah. Like, there's videos of that. But
look at you, me, in my mansion.
He's speaking, but, yeah, it's like a whole thing. Well, and remember, it was like, remember back in those days, it was him and Don Lemon, like, being the guys on COVID, and they're kind of going back and forth, and they have this, like, bromance going on. Yeah. And now he's kind of becoming this, like, you know, I'm skeptical about the stuff, too, kind of guy.
Right.
Now that he's been fired and everybody's been fired from CNN.
And he got roasted by Dave Smith on a debate about it.
Yeah, that was an event. And then you also have things at CNN, too, where one of my favorites, and it's something that I've mentioned on the podcast many times, is the infamous backpack sniffer.
We couldn't find a video of this. It's like gone.
It is
from
like
the internet
scrubbed, but the images still exist. I remember watching the videos back in the day, and it's important to understand who this person is. Arwood Damon.
Really quick, before we go into her background, can you go into the context around what this is, just so people understand?
Exactly. That? So we talked about this two episodes ago. I'm pretty sure I brought this exact moment up two episodes ago when we were talking about the Syria stuff. But it's this goes back to during the Obama administration when Assad allegedly used gas weapons on his own people as the civil war seemed to be kind of coming towards a close. And then we had the CNN correspondent, Arwood Damon, who was on the ground, and there's a video that did exist. Now all we seem to have is images. I remember watching this video vividly.
Tried to find it on Wayback Machine. Unfortunately, it doesn't archive video. But yeah. You do find these images.
But she's basically like walking down, and they're like, there's this backpack. And then she goes down to it, and she's like, yeah, that smells like chemicals. or that smells like sarin gas. Yeah.
Smells like gas.
Yeah.
Which, how ridiculous to like, put your face to a thing that could potentially have
and
a
it was
chemical
like,
weapon.
It was like mere days after the attack, too. Yeah, like
what?
And it's just one of those things where we're like, wait, what? And it's a funny thing, too, where when I look up this person,
oh, I found it.
You found the video.
I found the video.
Oh.
Well, I should say, Grok found the video. I asked it to find me a link to the video.
Oh, man, I've asked Grok several times.
Really?
For this,
and yeah, I did, too. It.
What can I say?
You're just a Grok wizard.
Just a better Grokster.
Well, if you want to put it in the notes, I can bring it up. But while you're doing that, I'll explain here too. Where there's an important dynamic here that exists with her too, with this woman, where she is, and it's even on her Wikipedia page, where she is the granddaughter of a former prime minister who got executed in the Civil War. Mm. So like, there's political differences that exist with this reporter and Assad that exist there, and in her bloodline, right?
Yeah.
And she's the person on the ground being like, yep, smells like chemicals, right?
Yeah. Right, which is another example of the Naira testimony, like agitprop. Agitprop is propaganda specifically to agitate for something, for a war in this case, using scandal, right? So that backpack is supposedly belongs to a child, right? So it's there to demonstrate that. Now, the Naira testimony was back during Operation Desert Storm in agitation for the invasion, counter-response invasion to Kuwait. It turned out that the girl was the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador to the U.S.
And remind me, this is babies in incubators, right?
Yeah, this is the babies in incubators.
Can you just flesh that out
a little bit? So in order to provoke to get the Bush administration, this is Bush Sr. in the early 90s, to respond to the Iraq invasion of Kuwait, there was a bullshit testimony by this girl, this young woman named Naira, N-A-Y-I-R-A-H, who goes in and says that the soldiers are going into hospitals and throwing the babies out of the incubators. And that's like, oh, how dare they? We need to stop this terrible thing.
And that was just testimony. There was no video to support that.
Well, yeah, this was their early 90s.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of...
And literally... granddaughter?
Yeah. No, daughter.
Daughter.
Daughter of daughter the Kuwaiti of, ambassador
yeah.
to the U.S.
That was the person giving the testimony.
Yes. And like that was not understood by the public at the time.
Only slightly has a dog in that fight.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Here's the video that Joe managed to find live on this podcast.
What can I say?
What can you say?
I'm a great researcher.
He's a good grokker.
And there's definitely something that stings. These backpacks belong.
There's definitely something that stings. Well, okay. Yeah. And then it goes into like that this is the. Yeah, CNN speaks with survivors of suspected chemical attack. And that's important to note, too, is at this point, it was suspected chemical attack.
Mm-hmm. Right? So they're trying to build the case for U.S. intervention. Because remember, Obama said his red line was chemical or biological weapons being used because they suspected that they had them, probably because we gave it to them. I don't know. And at that point, because that's what happened in Iraq, right? We remember this, right? Oh, my God, he gassed the Kurds with the weapons we gave him to prosecute the war in Iran. But anyways... that itself was the controversy at the time to try to get the Obama administration to enter directly into the conflict against Assad.
So not the first time that we have seen this or that CNN has done this.
Yeah, exactly. remember when Brian Williams had to apologize for lying about his Iraq helicopter crash?
I wish you weren't a liar.
No, no, actually, I don't.
Brian Williams was like the top anchor at ABC.
It was NBC. I said NBC earlier. Yeah. So
one of the places. They're all the same to me. Yeah. But he was the top anchor, and he was forced to resign. He's back. He's back at it again. He's back in the.
They revived him.
Yeah, he's been revived in recent years.
They're like, you've been rehabilitated.
But he had a whole story that he went on air about being in a helicopter in Iraq and getting put down and crash landing and all this stuff too, right? Wild. And then it just turned out never happened.
Completely false.
Completely
wild.
False.
Yeah, never happened.
Hillary Clinton had a similar thing. She was talking about getting hit by fire.
Being shot at.
Being shot at. Yeah.
Yeah.
He shouldn't have been standing there.
She shouldn't have been. We shouldn't have been in Iraq, to be clear. Like, that's true.
But it kind of just goes to show of how the dramatization of these things like really fuel the machine, right?
And this is the classic yellow journalism. Like the babies incubators thing always gets me because it's the exact same lie that they did in World War I. Kaiser troops bayoneting children in hospitals was one of the lies to get us involved in World War I.
It's literally babies and incubators of its time.
Yeah, before the sinking in Lusitania.
Wow.
Yeah. So that side sort of agitprop is everywhere. And one of the things that we have is this phenomena where we see it in the past, but we can't apply it to the present. We just don't have the tools, right? Because it's secret, it's operations, it's covert, all that kind of stuff. And it's much quicker to lie and to get out that story really quickly than it is to actually do your job and fact check and do all that kind of stuff. So you have the perverse incentives for clicks and views and all that kind of stuff to break a story. You have, of course, in this case, there was no time limit, right? They could have done their work and then told a more compelling story about, we don't know that we checked and this guy could be this weird torturer and all that kind of stuff. But they're not interested in that because they want to tell a narrative. Mm-hmm. And that influence of State Department soft pressure or hard pressure on media to tell a narrative that's compliant with, you know, State Department goals is very real. Now, we saw it in all of these historical examples of yellow journalism. We're seeing it today in CNN, possibly with the Syrian, with this story.
And we just so happened to get lucky and have this fact checker actually reveal the truth to us. Because, I suppose it's possible that internet sleuths could come upon this guy's actual identity online and reveal that. But that probably wouldn't get out to the CNN viewership.
Well, it also raises a question, though, too. Can we trust this fact checker?
Yeah.
Like, there's also that. Like,
I mean,
like,
it raises like, this all the is questions. The, well, like, what can you trust?
We went through who's funding this fact checker.
Yeah.
Right? And you're just like, well, they're part of the machine, too. Mm-hmm. Like, they're trying to spew a narrative of some sort.
So what would be their incentive if it was their mission to reveal the guy's real
identity? The quo bono here doesn't seem to indicate that this was part of the larger narrative structure. But that kind of indicates too that there is, you know, it gives you an insight into the total information dominance control that these apparatuses are trying to exert in these areas. And sometimes they fail. And that's what you would expect. What you wouldn't expect is 100% compliance all the time with the narrative. So that kind of actually gives some credibility to the case that this is an operation. right? In the sense that it's not perfect. It's not 100%, right? It does have mistakes that are made that you can then point to and say, like, okay, this is done by people. This isn't a conspiracy theory.
There is also a thing where we could be looking at this from an American lens of thinking about the American narrative when this fact-checking organization is meant to fact-check things within Syria, and it could be something about a Syria narrative. Like within that, it doesn't really necessarily apply to us.
Right. This guy could be more interested in the Turkish faction than HTS or one of the other seven factions that are involved in the Syrian civil war. And they want to embarrass HTS.
Yeah. There's massive amounts of variables that could be going into it. And it's like, it might be something that's just like American eyes. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah,
and it matters about the other eyes in the region of what they're seeing with it. And we might just not have the context of that too.
So my suspicion is, and especially the Occam's razor here, is that CNN wanted to do something very emotional to get viewers. They bought the narrative of, you know, that HTS was telling them as they're taking them through the prison, because it was the easiest thing to do, right? And then lastly of that, they saw how emotional and compelling it could be, how many clicks it could get, and they went with it. Part of that being that there is a clear incentive for HTS to lie that they are willing to go along with in a conspiracy of incentive, right? That isn't like they sat down and agreed, we're going to lie to the American public in order to get support for this coup. It's more like we're just interested and we have the same incentives. You want to tell a compelling story. I want to tell a compelling story. That's a very common thing for reporting to do.
Sure. Yeah. Interesting.
Let's move on to a different place in the world.
Oh, wait, one more thing. As far as the guy being not appearing to be as dehydrated or malnourished as you would expect from being in a Syrian prison for 3 months or 1 month or whatever, it very well could be that this guy was caught, cut a deal with HTS to say, I will do your agitprop for you, was put back into prison so that he could be discovered. Right. That makes most sense for me when you do like the nails, the finger, like his kind of like kind of corny, like, I don't know. I get like an inauthenticity out of the way he acts in the moment.
For sure.
Maybe that's the lens I'm bringing to it.
I get an inauthenticity out of Clarissa too.
Yeah.
Like I feel an inauthentic thing there that's going on.
You're full of shit today.
So I don't know. Like it's one of these things where there's a bunch of different angles, and all we're kind of just looking at right now is just like, it's interesting, this fact checking organization and kind of a whole narrative that's spread around it. Like, I don't know what to make of it beyond that. I just know all the actors that I'm always kind of distrustworthy of are all involved.
Yeah. That's another good reason to look at it. It's just, once you start seeing the pattern over and over again, at some point your intuition starts to fire in these moments. You start going like, something's weird here.
So that's what you would tell people to take away from this, is like just a higher degree of skepticism to stories like this if you were to see it come across the news. Mm-hmm.
And often just in war propaganda, that's just wise to have. Always kind of have a little bit of a cynical view of the information that you're getting. Even if it's like information on your side, everybody's propagandizing everybody, right? And that's always important to remember.
Why is it always just the mainstream or the legacy networks that have people on the ground in these contexts? Is it just because that they're just funded?
Right. Yeah.
It's expensive.
So how do we
it's hard to get indie journalists.
How do we get Joe
places?
Rogan to fund like a war correspondent?
Well, it's like back in the day, like Tim Pool was an independent journalist during Arab Spring in Egypt.
Or Tucker Carlson. I mean, he's making money hand over fist.
Right? Yeah. Right. I mean, it's just one of those. Part of the problem right now in the media landscape is an underfunding of the shula, the journalism, like the classic on the ground, talking to the people that matter.
Yeah, like it's hard to get a bunch of Schellenbergers. Right. Like Schellenberger will go to Brazil and sit in the hearings going on over the Twitter cases, right?
Well,
like,
and it's easier to get a press release or a summary of what's happening on the ground from an organization like Bellingcat or AP or Semaphore or any of those sorts of organizations that speak with authority and are supposedly NewsGuard authenticated. NewsGuard is staffed by CIA.
Classic.
But those examples, right? It's like it's much easier. So it also fits the laziness of the modern journalist to come in and just repeat the talking points without criticism. And additionally, that there's also an entire philosophical shibboleth there of neutral journalism saying like, well, these are neutral. They're not content. There isn't a philosophy built into the content, right? Because that's how they cast themselves. Unfortunately, that's just not factually true.
They're the neutral content that gets their like talking points handed down to them from these organizations that are just giving out regime talking points, right? Like,
right.
But they're the neutral ones, you know.
Yeah. Like, so it's laziness enforced by a philosophy.
And isn't that sort of the what was it, the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act? Wasn't that a part of why that happens now? That was the sort of like the propaganda reform that happened in, I think it was 2012-ish.
Oh, you're thinking, yeah, you're thinking of Smith Mundt. That's the, that allows the U.S. government to distribute its foreign orientated propaganda domestically to the United States.
Correct.
The question to the question remains, and this isn't, I don't understand this. So, but the question remains whether or not Smith Mundt is what we're talking about when we're talking about press releases from the State Department to there, because the State Department did press releases before Smith Mundt. So it was a question of, you know, the steel man of that is just that the government is now allowed to give its propaganda to the media, saying this is what we're saying in Ukraine about freedom, not saying I'm going to tell CNN how to cover domestic policy,
which might be a component of why we see like 40 different local news, you know, networks saying, you know, dangerous for our democracy, right? Like that.
Yeah.
That compilation.
That's also a process. Like when you put out a press release or when you put out a commentary as a network, sometimes the network head is saying, I want this message to go out because I think this is important for our viewers to hear, for our brand, for our whatever. And then it gets repeated by all those local news reporters and things.
Sure.
Like that. I don't think that's related to Smith Mundt per se. It could be. One of the things we don't know, and it was true, especially when you go to the pre Carter administration, the church committee, and Jeffrey Sachs was on Tucker Carlson this week. He did a great breakdown of this. The church commission itself was the only real time where we got a look into the intel community's actions and behaviors. And at that time, we did discover that they were propagandizing our media for international purposes and domestic purposes. So was there reforms? Were the church community reforms strong enough to keep that from happening? I don't think so. When you look at the prevalence of former CIA in important media organizations like NewsGuard and like obviously or funding like the example that we have here of the Syrian fact checker, if you think I was able to predict that was USAID without knowing anything about it because we see that pattern over and over again. And that pattern exists for specific State Department goals that they're open and honest about, that they come out and have, you know, NATO committee hearings meetings saying from tweets to tanks and all that jazz, right? So those sort of operations are there and happening, and to what degree they reflect domestic policy, like domestic coverage, is obvious. Like, it's right there. It's just that it has the degree of separation of being an NGO funded by the CIA rather than the CIA themselves.
Right.
And we have to build enough popular understanding of why that's wrong to get the change that we want, to have a new church commission, to that sort of thing. And, you know, hopefully that's the ambition. That's why we want Kash Patel as FBI director. That's why we want Tulsi Gabbard as the national security director.
DNI. Director of National
Security. Yeah.
Yes, but exactly. Yeah, we want those people who we know are going to be more transparent, more accountable, and more truthful in the way that they had these organizations.
Or at least see the problem, an unaccountable, permanent state that is able to conduct foreign policy without any word from Congress, mm-hmm. from the people who actually pay the price of that foreign policy, which we do pay a price for. It's not free.
Right.
All right. So
speaking of foreign policy, Bennett actually pinged me on this, and I found it to be a little bit interesting. We can go a little bit into here. So there was a Russian lieutenant general that was assassinated a couple days ago. Or today, was it?
When? It was last night.
Last night? Yeah, recently. And going into it, I want to remind people of, remember back in 2022 when the daughter of Alexander Dugin, her car exploded? Mm-hmm. And it was believed that it was aimed at Alexander Dugin. Dugin is kind of the philosophy brain behind Putin. Like Putin aligned in Russia. He's written a bunch of books. He's kind of a big academic in political science in Russia, kind of like a really well-known figure in political commentary within Russia. And his daughter, who was 29 years old, Daria Dugina, apparently we learned that apparently Russians, they feminize the last names, the proper names. So we were like, wait, did she marry a Dugina?
Really? So his daughter gets an A added to her name?
Yeah. Yeah. We learned that in looking this up. I didn't realize that about Russian names. But
how do you do a they them with that though?
It's Dugin X.
Dugin X.
Those Latin X's I keep looking for, but never find.
Yeah. So, but basically,
I've got a few Latin X's. kidding.
Basically, remember that that had occurred, because this is a very similar story here. So we have Lieutenant General Igor Kirillov. Great name. I love it.
Great name.
Great name. He was the chief of the military's nuclear, biological, and chemical protection forces. And he was killed as he was leaving his office. And also his assistant died in the attack. And how he died? They're getting very creative with these assassination attempts. Bomb in a scooter.
The old scooter bomb.
The old scooter bomb.
Gets him every
time.
Never
trust those scooters.
Dude.
But wow. So there was just a scooter that came in and parked right next to his office and just waited for him to come out.
Was it a bird scooter?
He shouldn't have been standing there.
I don't know.
Bennett's got a new favorite sound. It's
usually when anyone dies. That's what I'll play.
Yeah, I've seen some reports. Some say that it's outside his office. Some say it's outside of his apartment. His assistant died with him, so I'm assuming outside his office, unless there's something going on there. I don't know.
Oh.
But
don't be suspicious.
But according to the Ukrainian Secret Service, the SBU, they said that there was an anonymous report coming from within the SBU that's saying that the agency was in on the attack.
That the SBU was?
Yeah.
Oh.
But the officials spoke on the condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to release the information. But the officials said he is a war criminal and entirely a legitimate target. So
seems pretty likely then.
Seems probably likely that it was the SBU, but anonymous, we don't know. Hmm.
When the question obviously is, does the SBU have the resources to conduct an operation like this within Russia? Or
are they trying
some financial backer certainly
take credit to gin up support?
Or to take credit because we don't want the fingerprints of the intelligence community of America on record as
so Ukraine is just another NGO.
Yeah, that's the way to think about it. Yeah.
I get it now.
Yeah.
That's all a client state is.
It's a client state. It's a GO. Right? It's a vassal state of the United States efforts to reduce the Russian capability to conduct war in order to isolate and control Russia by, you know, controlling them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's kind of funny because there's a dialogue that started forming between the SBU and Russia where the SBU is like, they're claiming, well, Russia used chemical weapons 4,800 times since this war started. So he's an entirely legitimate target. And Russia's like, nah, you used chemical agents in Kiev. So that's where we're at right now. Nuh-uh.
Nice.
You did it.
I just wish this was all done by Twitter. Like, you just have like the government sponsored Twitter.
It kind of is.
Well, I know Iran foreign, does that a lot.
The foreign ministers do that. They like talk shit at each other on Twitter. Like, do you remember during the Ukraine, this story, like this just sparked in my memory. Remember when the initial Ukraine invasion happened? And this is when like the crypto boom was still going on. Like the crypto was kind of just about to die off at the time in the last cycle. The foreign finance minister, the finance minister in Ukraine offered an NFT launch to crypto bros to come in and donate money to Ukraine's forces, and they would give them an NFT. And then they never gave them the NFT. They would give them like a historical badge.
He got rugged hard.
I didn't donate to it.
Not you.
But it's just kind of funny is like that, like they were sitting here engaging on crypto Twitter trying to like get donations from people during that. And they're like, we'll give you free NFTs.
I have an idea. These guys are big stupid.
But like, so like the Twitter warfare thing is like a very real thing that happened, right?
So what's the State Department's response to this?
Yeah, so the State Department comes in. So AP reporters are asking a bunch of high up officials. They go to the State Department and one of their like main comms guys, Matthew Miller, he's just like, now we're unaware of it.
Don't know nothing about
it. We don't know. And then they go to other countries. Like they go to like there's this big summit that's going on in Europe and they're just like asking people, now we don't know anything about it. That's just like all the response that's coming to it. And then it's just like, okay, that's where we're going to be at. They're all just going to be like, assassinate this guy who's in charge of nuclear, biological, and chemical protection forces. And we're just going to sweep it under the rug and just keep move on.
Unaware of it. There's been a lot of that lately. Same with the UAP thing where the government's like, we don't know.
Well, it's important to understand that the intelligence community, specifically in its enabling code under the Eisenhower passed legislation that created the CIA, specifically empowers them to lie to us. Right? It says anything at the directive.
You can't handle the truth.
Exactly. Anything at the directive of the president. And they've interpreted that to mean that they are allowed to conduct operations on the world, and you can't do that without secrecy, and secrecy requires lies. So the empire of lies is built into the structure of the system itself. And so when you see these denials, and if you get that part of your brain, like the part of your brain that went to public school and learned that the government isn't allowed to lie to us, you if you have that intuition, you have to reconcile with the fact.
What's your source on that, Dave?
Was that the government of the they're empowered to lie to us?
That they're not allowed to lie to us. Oh, well, source?
Because yeah, but that's the trick. Is like they're not supposed to by the Constitution. They can't, right? There's that is considered a fraud, right? The government's not supposed to be able to do that, right? If your congressman lies, they're liable, right? If you're
well,
in the sense of like if they tell something false that's like fraudulent meaning.
Sure.
So but the executive branch can, according to their interpretation of the code passed by Congress. So like that's where
I can trust nothing.
That's where
we,
yeah, that's where nothing. When
pe- that's okay. kind of the point. Yeah.
But that's the thing is like we got to get more people to have that degree of skepticism when it comes to statements from the State Department. Right. It's like because the people who are sitting there in the room with them have no incentive to question what's going on with that. Right. They're just like, well, the State Department denied it. So therefore, that's the end of the story. Right. And that can't be the end of the story, because if you are familiar with these actions of these people and with how they've interpreted their own rules and regulations by law, they're allowed to lie to you for your benefit, according to them.
And that's why the legacy press is dying, because they are expected to be or have been expected to be antagonistic to the government. But they've just obviously taken up their talking points, as we know. And it's bearing out in the fact that people don't trust them anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like, think about it. Would you expect a tobacco executive to tell you accurate numbers about cancer rates with smoking tobacco?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Would you expect that?
But you can sue them. That's the trick. And they have been sued for millions and millions of dollars.
Hard to sue the government.
You can't sue the State Department for lying to you in a press department, in a press release or an open, what do you call it when they get all the press in a room, in a press statement,
press conference.
You can't sue them for that.
What if
they've given themselves the power to lie to you?
What if a senator is saying that Iranian drones are off the East Coast?
Can you sue them for it?
Yeah.
Probably not.
That's classified.
Probably not. Because all he has to say is just, well, that's what I believed. Right? It's very difficult to do that sort of persecution.
That's wild.
Yeah. Because what you're alluding here to is we have an article from Newsweek. The Pentagon denies reports of mystery drones coming from Iranian mothership because there was a, what's the story here? There was a congressman.
He's a New Jersey state senator.
State senator.
Yeah.
That was talking about this mothership.
Iranian mothership off the coast of the Eastern Seaboard. Yeah.
And was this information based on anything? Did he got a briefing, right? Like there have been a variety of these briefings where state senators and reps have been like,
Lindsey Graham told them,
gone to Washington.
Probably.
Yeah, Lindsey Graham sits them all down, says anything happens, it's weird, it's Iran. I don't know.
He's a U.S. representative. He's not a state.
Van Drew?
Yeah, he's in the 2nd congressional district.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah,
he would have access to a skiff.
So he went into a skiff. And Lindsey Graham sat him down.
Oh, I appreciate him being a caring member.
So this is highly classified. Go ahead.
He got the old Mike Johnson.
Not our skiff.
Well, he's gonna get a t-shirt.
Just send one to Mike.
We should send one to Mike.
Send one to Mike's office. Wouldn't that be funny?
Let's absolutely do that.
That would be a good idea.
100% doing it.
And just like send like a little care package that says like thinking of Ukraine.
That is a great way to get on a bigger list than we're already on.
Yeah. So this report was, so he went on to Fox News and made this insane claim. And of course the internet went, what? Because he's claiming that there's a mothership.
What did you say?
Off the Eastern Seaboard that we don't know about that is sending these drones into New Jersey.
Well, because people are reporting that they're going into the water. They're like,
yeah,
the drones are submerging into the ocean.
Yeah, there's a couple different claims to distinguish. One is the drones that are flying over cities that are obviously hovering over like 1,000 feet off the ground or 500 feet off the ground with blinking lights.
Right, they have more clear markers of aircraft.
Right,
right.
There's the drone phenomena. Then there's UAP phenomena, which includes going into the water and stuff like that. So I'd separate those. Like a ball of light going into the water is a slightly different claim than just the drones.
True.
Right?
Very true. And so, there are both, and they are being convoluted as people perceive these things and record them.
Yeah.
In fact, there's a funny meme I saw. It's like aircraft identification chart in New Jersey, and it's 20 different kinds of aircraft, and they're just all labeled drone because people aren't really distinguishing at all anymore.
Huh. Yeah, and that's an interesting one too, because one of the claims from a lot of people on the ground in New Jersey is that they have these apps where you can see, you know, basically chart where you can look up, kind of like the Star Map app,
right,
where you can see where the airplanes are at in real time.
Because they all have transmitters that will broadcast their information publicly.
Yeah, right. And that
for
public,
air traffic control.
Exactly. So that itself is known. In fact, if you're an Uber driver, that's what Uber drivers use to predict when they should drive. When there are going to be lots of flights coming in, right? So that itself, and you see blinking lights that look like that are hovering that aren't on that list, then you're like, well, that's a drone at that point, right? I mean, like, that's an unidentified flying object.
Yeah. Yep.
So what are we talking about here? Right. And we got this great clip of Michael Schellenberger talking on Fox News about this phenomena.
You have the president-elect and military base commanders all saying that the Biden administration is not telling the truth.
Strong voice.
In fact, we had Mayorkas and Kirby on Thursday and Friday both claim that there was no reported or confirmed drone sightings over military bases. It's been widely reported. There was a major investigation in the Wall Street Journal for many months, actually for many years, of drones being over military bases. They then said today, Kirby in that same comment, he said that they evaluated 5,000 cases over the last few days. It's inconceivable to me that they interviewed 5,000 people to figure out where they were standing, what time of day, where they were looking to be able to dismiss all of these cases. You know, look, people do make mistakes. I think there's been a lot of mistaken sightings without question, maybe a vast majority of them. But I mean, we obtained the conference call between the White House and New Jersey mayors today. The mayors are livid. One of them got up there and said, I had two automobile-sized drones hovering over my house, and they're making a lot of noises as opposed to a jet plane a very long distance away. So, you know, I think it's a remarkable situation to have Trump demanding this. I think we can count on some transparency now.
So, I mean, obviously, this is the exact parallel we were talking about before with the government just denying any knowledge of this stuff, which is crazy because this isn't in some far-flung desert. This is over populous areas inside of our country, and the government has given no answers to
people. Our citizens are seeing things. It's not, because it's really easy to just be like, well, over on the other side of the world, this is happening. And we're just like, okay, you know, but like, there's so many people reporting sightings of things and all this stuff, and people just have questions. They're like, what the hell is going on right now?
Well, the newest,
I'm freaking out, man.
I mean, people are, and the newest theory to come forward is that some of these drones might be nuclear sniffers. So, like, I guess the report that I read, or the news that I read on the internet, so with a grain of salt, is that some new piece of nuclear radioactive material went missing from the port of Newark, and that.
I got a nuclear sniffer for you right here.
Nice. She's on the ground. Or in she's sniffing.
It's definitely something spicy in there.
Something spicy.
The people of New Jersey are smelling something very spicy, and they're like, what the hell is going on?
Well, we got to get her out of the Middle East and over in New Jersey.
That's right. That's right. Plenty of backpacks to sniff in New Jersey. Where's Biden on all this?
Yeah, he's
King Sniffer.
The Sniffer in Chief?
Captain Sniffer in Chief.
They're not kids.
They're not young enough.
Oh, fair.
These
fair.
Drones aren't young enough.
Just got to put a little ball cap on the nuke and be like, go get him, Biden. No, I mean, but seriously, like, this would be a huge problem if there were nuclear, like, radioactive material in a populous area like New Jersey or New York City. Mm-hmm. And apparently gamma radiation, people are posting maps on X of gamma radiation levels in the area, and there are elevated spots, like, seemingly highly elevated spots.
In a historical time frame or in a...
Like right now.
No, I know that, but just because there are right now doesn't mean there isn't normally.
I don't know. There could be a time slice.
Because we do have planes that are like nicknamed sniffers that is their purpose is to examine air particles and sniff out nuclear stuff, right? So it's not crazy to assume drones can now do that.
So X is theorizing that there's a missing radioactive material from a medical device. Mm-hmm. And it's being reported that this medical device is the thing that these drones are looking for. Theorized, not reported. Yeah.
Yes, I guess the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission posted an alert on their website to Cat 3 nuclear waste that has come up missing. According to the report, The shipping container containing the radioactive material was found damaged and empty. Could this be what the nuclear drone sniffers are looking for?
Danger zone.
Danger zone.
So,
well, it kind of goes into like a lot of the drone activity appears to be military.
Right. And therefore,
which that's always been a theory.
That's why you don't tell the base that you're snooping by the base. You think maybe a soldier is involved in this.
Well, it's sort of
or
like
you think, or and then you'd have the additional calculus. You could see our masters making, which is the panic of a drones that you can't explain is an easier degree of panic, which hasn't really been met by panic. It's been more like this is curious, right? Because there hasn't been any real negative side effect. It's just strange and kind of fearful.
So
but
far,
not panic that you would have if you said, oh, by the way, some radioactive nuclear material has gone missing.
But it's also kind of similar to how we were talking about with the fact checkers of like, you know, all of this is fairly decentralized and not everybody's talking with each other. So like these people are doing things with like one group could be doing things with drones. And then you have like another military group that has no idea that those drones are even around or whatever. And it just becomes all this miscommunication everywhere. And then you have, you know, some commander of an air, like of a plane or something that's like being like, well, I saw something and it was crazy and I don't know what to make of it. And you're just like, and it just becomes this thing that continues to spiral and escalate in such a way.
It's also acts as a very effective distraction from other phenomena, right? So like we're talking about this, we're not talking about something else. Obviously Adam would point to that as part of the aims that you could accomplish by doing this very thing.
Sure.
Yeah.
There is a even deeper rabbit hole to go down on this. Right. I came up across this on X. It's an image of a message from some anonymous poster on a message board. Looks like zzzchan.xyz. I don't know. Anyways.
This seems dangerous. Let me look at this first.
Sketchy. That's why I said it's a deep rabbit hole. But it says, the next false flag will be centered on the premise of a malicious interdiction of nuclear source materials. It will not involve a nuclear device or nuclear detonation, but rather a radiological threat. Nuclear source materials will be deliberately leaked to target areas to inflict severe injuries through radiation exposure. The real number of casualties as a result of these attacks will remain very low. The purpose is to create a new method of restricting freedom of movement and new policies that will enable the government to continue its expansion of power. The media will display images of attack survivors who will have burns and lesions across their skin, videos depicting overwhelmed triage centers with victims vomiting or otherwise unresponsive will be shared on social media. The threat of radiation exposure, an invisible enemy, will be used as the primary vector. So,
hey, Merry Christmas, everyone.
This feels very QAnon-y.
Oh, super yeah, QAnon-y for sure.
Which
I expected it to be, but I guess it's someone else.
Well, it's my belief that QAnon was an op.
Oh, yeah, I think that's seems, a fairly...
At this point, seems
fairly safe bet.
True.
Yeah. But in any case...
It could be, if you're going to do something like this, I mean, there is some evidence, for example, that the anthrax attacks after 9/11 was, you know, panic and, you know, maybe an operation.
COVID was panic.
An invisible threat is a good threat to get funded.
Yeah, right. And I don't think that people would go for a virus again just because of the way that people kind of saw behind the curtain.
That was the last invisible
COVID,
threat.
That... It could be something similar to that you can't see, that you can't avoid, but it could be anywhere, it could be everywhere, and it could kill you. So stay in your house.
Yeah, we've gone from
wear
these,
a paper mask.
We've gone from
I'm
these,
so
like,
fucking scared right now. You shut up.
We've gone through God. From these like wars on abstractions, like these abstractive wars, which is like war
terrorism,
on terror, whatever that means, to now like these wars on invisibility.
Yeah.
Right? Like these things that you can't see, but. Trust us, bro.
Yeah.
The Neo Bros, they
the
love
Neo
it.
The Neo Bros, they do love it. Well, we'll have to wait and see, but for now, I think that's a good place to wrap up. All gentlemen, thanks so much for your time. On behalf of David Rand, Kyle Mack, Bennett on the buttons, my name is Joe Sheehan. This is Human Reaction. Thanks so much for watching. We'll see you next time. Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com. And remember...
And there's definitely something that stings.
It's called Sex Panther. It's illegal in 9 countries.